Welcome to the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. This is where we'll inspire you to transcend, transform, make magic, live your soul purpose, and be the unicorn that you truly are. Live in pure bliss.
Hello, everyone. This is Mema Carmo, host of the Pure Bliss Show. Today, I have an amazing young man with me, Teo Roxon. He's a leader, and he's committed to diversity, inclusion, and social justice. Teo is the founder of UYD Media. Welcome, Teo, the third culture kid. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. Pleasure is mine. I think we were just interviewing you yesterday on my show, so that's a pleasure to be on your
show. Yeah, thanks for being on. So tell me, why are you the third culture kid? Why is that your moniker?
Well, I mean, it's actually not mine, but it was one of the things. It's actually what describes me. So I'm a walking contradiction. I'm Nigerian. I grew up in 5 countries and 4 continents, and that was because of my dad's job. So what that meant was I was always a minority everywhere I went. I was always in between cultures. And the idea of what a third culture is it means that you spent the formative periods of your lives outside of your parents' culture. So you have your culture, your parents' culture, and the mix of all the cultures you've been. So
right.
when I came across the term, I was like, oh my goodness, that's a word for me. I didn't know that there was a word that existed to describe kind of my experiences. So it's something that a lot of third culture kids, TCKs, have taken on as a moniker. But, you know, it happens with immigrants. It happens with people that are diplomatic kids, missionary kids, army brats, or people that just have the lifestyles where their parents travel a lot. You tend to just sort of find yourself thinking different ways. So I love the term. I feel like it encapsulates who I am, and I just took it on ever since.
Yeah, I think it's amazing how you've made that part of your lifestyle. I've met a lot of people who are, you know, diplomats and kids or whose parents are, who are military brats. And somehow it seems sometimes that that's a crutch or that's not a benefit. But I think I really admire how much you've embraced that as part of who you are. And I feel like it makes you richer in many ways when you have the opportunity to kind of travel the world and have exposure to different cultures. So tell me what part of you, what made you choose to embrace that and make that your work versus kind of a crutch in a certain way? What brought you to this place of embracing diversity, inclusion, and culture?
Well, it's a series of stories. For me, I know you've had a voice in your head. For me, when I was 10, 11, I've always had this urge, right, to do something great, to do something that can make a global impact in the world. And the first time I was really cognizant of myself traveling was when I was around 10, 11. I had moved to Sweden before, but I was a little too young to grasp the significance of that difference of culture. So it was from Nigeria to Burkina Faso, another country in West Africa, but it's French-speaking. And I was going to go to an American international school at the time. So I was going from a Nigerian culture to a Burkina Faso culture to a American international school where I was also going through puberty. So there was a lot of changes. And I was initially excited. I was really excited. Excited when you're traveling. And at that time, to a lot of Nigerians, anything related to America, like Mecca, I was like, yes, Mecca. So I went there, and my initial excitement started to just dampen because as I went to school, I was realizing that I didn't know how to make friends, or everybody seemed to already have their own clique, and they had their own group of people. And it really bothered me. You know, sometimes I would come back home, and I would cry, and I was, my mom would try her best to tell me that I am not inferior, even though I felt like I was. And it's like, no, you're still good. You're still good. So I did a few things. I started observing the landscape, and I started looking at what it was that was bringing these people together and why they were so happy with each other. And I was like, I want to be like that too. So I saw that, they connected to, some of the people that I wanted to connect around sports, and I love sports, but at that time I only played football or soccer. So I saw that basketball was something that they played a lot of tennis. So I did a few unconventional things. I went to the library and I started studying the history of basketball and tennis. So I read up all the rules. I read up about all the greats, and then I started picking up the magazines to know who the current players were. And when I felt like I was good enough to understand what the game was about, I went to the best basketball player on campus, and I asked him, I said, hey, Michael, could you teach me how to translate all this knowledge I have on the court? And luckily, he said yes. But, you know, those one-on-ones became two-on-twos and three-on-threes and four-on-fours, and then I started to build friendships then. And that, to me, right. as a 10, 11-year-old, started to really waking something up in me. So I started to see, okay, so here I was with the most amount of white people I had ever seen at that time in my life, and people from Europe, from Asia, from America, and everywhere. And I was finding a way to find connectors. And I just became more obsessed with that as I grew up. You know, a lot of my mindset was shaped by the late Nelson Mandela and Oprah Winfrey. And I loved the social justice element of Nelson Mandela and the connecting element of Oprah. So, you know, as I grew older, I started to work on my connectors. I started to study human behavior and started to see how people can learn from the diversity and inclusion that we can have. And, you know, it's sort of spawned into what the podcast that I host is now, and all the consulting opportunities that I continue to have. So, but that's a story there.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I read someplace that you talked about the importance of building bridges and not walls. And I think it's so important because in our culture, in the world now, we're becoming more globalized. And because of social media, the world's getting smaller. So we're meeting people that are across the world. We're closer, and yet we're still diverse. So how do you help people build the bridges and tear down walls despite all that's going on in today's world?
Yeah, I think it's something that we all have to get comfortable with the fact that we are different, but also understand that there's also some similarity with that. I think a lot of people have used differences as a wall. They feel like if you're different, that's something that you should be afraid of. And I think we need to seek to understand that difference, right? And it's okay to not share an opinion. It's okay to not come from the same perspective. But at the core, you know, as humans, we should seek to see how we can leverage all these differences and learn from that. I think a lot of people have sort of grown up in this bubble where they feel like their way is the only way and you know, there's no other possible way of success. And I think as you go older and you think like that, it becomes more dangerous because then it starts to affect your hiring decisions. You know, it starts to affect hiring decisions, starts to affect how you teach your kids, starts to affect how you teach history. And then you impact a whole generation without actually realizing that just because of your action, the way people have observed you, people start to adopt your mindset because they're not open-minded to things. And that's the dangerous thing. So I think it starts with us being actually aware of the differences. We have to be aware and acknowledge this awareness. And then the next step is to seek to say, all right, I want to explore this curiosity that I have about the world. If that person is different from me, why? You know, why? Anything I don't understand, ask the question. And, you know, anything that I've heard about and might have a question about and might make me to be more biased, question that bias and say, I'm sorry that I feel this bias, but I want to get, you know, I want to move past this bias. So can you tell me more about yourself? You know, it starts with that acknowledgement and self-awareness. And I think that's how we can go with that.
I think that's really powerful. I think differences are good. I believe that at the intersection of curiosity and diversity is where innovation happens. When you look at the U.S. being the melting pot of the world, all the immigrants that have come to this country and you know, how it's fostered, you know, innovation in science, in technology, in culture. Look at some of the top businesses in the country, in the world are, you know, they're actually in the U.S. were began by immigrants. And so I think that diversity and the curiosity to explore that is where you really begin to see the magic happens. And I think also it's a beautiful thing because you're looking, when you meet people who are ethnically diverse in terms of appearance from different colors and different races, they're amongst the most exotic people in the world. You know, so I think that when you look at culture, it's really important to be curious about people that are different. And difference is a very beautiful and good thing. I also believe that it's important to, when you have a commitment or you have a curiosity, to be brave enough to ask the questions about, you know, I think maybe you're not like me. How are you different? I want to know more. And when you're brave enough to ask the questions, that's where, you know, things do begin to change. I read someplace about you talking about you had the passion for diversity. You have the passion for different cultures to learn and to explore and to help to break down some of society's inequities, but you didn't feel you were brave enough to fight for justice because you kind of felt you weren't ready to kind of just stand up and be seen. But something happened in your life where you nearly faced death, and that kind of woke you up. Tell me about what happened and how that catapulted you from being, interested and curious but not engaged to jumping into your life the way you have today.
Yeah, great question. So, growing up the way I did, you just sort of, your reality is a different type of worldview. So I when I was 17, I moved to the United States for my university education, right? And when I was there, I got pretty involved in a lot of nonprofits catered towards advancing movements towards Africa and all that. And I started doing that really from my sophomore year. I was working full-time jobs while I was in school and leading marketing efforts. And a lot of times, even though it's hard, you get fueled by the passion. But by the time it came for me to graduate and I realized that I had to find a decent job and all that kind of stuff, I just sort of started finding myself really listening to the world and having them dictate my success for me. So I applied to 85 jobs, and my degree was in marketing. I was trying to get a job in marketing. 85 jobs told me no, and I started just feeling just less than low. And, imagine a 21-year-old, you've gotten an education, you have a minor in French, you think you're relatively educated, and you're cultured, and all these people are telling you not good enough. So I started believing that, and then I just took a job that gave me an offer, and it wasn't even for anything in my degree. It was something that I was probably going to do like 2 years for them. And then when they hired me, end up being sales, which I hadn't been trained for, but it was just my reality. So I accepted it, and I accepted it because I thought I had a choice. And, 2 years in, I knew internally that I something had died, right? It wasn't my passion to be this guy to educate the world on the importance of diversity and leveraging diversity and understanding the time, patience, and perseverance it takes to do all that. That sort of just faded away until a few things happened. One was I went to New York City because I'd always had this fascination with New York City. I mean, it was the backdrop of all my favorite movies. And I just wanted to see them. My mentor had moved there, and my favorite basketball player is LeBron James. So I was like, I'm going to use that as a double excuse. See my mentor, see the city, and then catch a game with LeBron James. So I went there, and I just felt alive again, Neymar. It was like something had awoken in me. And I don't know what it was. It was the idea of, it's cliche, like Jay-Z and the Kiki song, this the life will inspire you and all that. But I felt like the concrete jungle waking me up. And I was like, I don't know what it is I'm feeling right now, but this has been missing for 2 years. I came back home, and I didn't really do much about it. I was like, it'll be nice to get there one day, but I don't know. And then I was driving to work 2 months after, and the same place of work that I'd become complacent with, and all of a sudden this car swerves into my lane, cuts it into half. I lose control of my car. I'm spinning left, right. It's drizzling. And, I hit this guardrail, the left one, the right one. And then as soon as the car lifts up, I'm certain that I'm about to face death, and I'm 22 years old. And the only thing that I could say to myself at that time was, like, I can't believe that I haven't done anything I said I was going to do. That was the only thing that came to my mind. It was like, you said you're going to do all this, and you haven't done anything you say you're going to do. And luckily, I was able to slam the brakes, and that somehow got the car down. And even though it was a three-car accident, my car was totaled, nothing happened to me physically. But it was very instrumental for me because I realized right then how quickly life could go, right? How short my mortality was. Yeah. And I was like, I was 22. I'm 27 now, but I just quit my job, moved to New York City. I was like, I just started having more faith in myself. I didn't know what it was in New York City. I was like, I'm going to get an MBA there, whatever. City awakens me for some reason. So I went there, didn't know what I was going to do. I quit the job, didn't have any security. And I just started pursuing what I've always said I wanted to do, that truth, that justice that I've been seeking for. So I started the podcast, As Told by Nomads, and it was based on my premise, why is it that we live in a global and digitalized world, yet we don't act global digital? And I started interviewing people. You know, while I would go to school at night, and the rest of the day I would be exploring the city and asking all these questions and creating this content. You know, a few months in, it started to do really, really well. Entrepreneur Magazine picked it up and said, hey, this is the number two business podcast of 2014. And I was like, what?
Congratulations on that, by the way. That's a big accomplishment. That's amazing.
Thank you so much. And a lot of these things, I was like, wow, this is like validation. You know, it was like, oh, my goodness. So I don't know what I'm doing yet, but I just know I'm telling the right story. So I kept doing that, and then it sort of led to all that's happened so far. But it all happened and stemmed from me being brave enough to finally just believe in myself and to say, you know, you might think you're too young, but your experiences are unique to you, right? And it's only you that has this. No one else has lived in 5 countries, 4 continents. No one else has worked in business across 6 industries and can speak to building, raising money, understanding the nuances. You said you wanted to do this. You don't have to be 45 to start doing this. What would the other people that you look up to say that you're depriving the world of that? So I started doing that, and it's been a journey ever since of believing in myself and having faith to just tell my story. So yeah, that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I think it's really interesting how we have these, you know, accidents in our lives, so to speak, where for your accident, your almost near death was the car accident. For me, it was getting breast cancer. And I, at the time when these things happen to you, you look at death in the eye, and then you do one of two things. You either say, I'm going to go back to my life the way it was, or it wakes you the hell up and you think, I have to wake up and I have to pursue my passion. And I wish people didn't have to have those things happen, because, you know, until we sometimes have something challenging in our lives happen, we don't really wake up to living our purpose and our passion. But I love how you talk about, I went to your website and you wrote something about how helping other people fuels you. And you said your accident woke you up and you realized you wanted to help other people, and how helping others fuels you, and how you see the world as being a bit broken and you want to mend the world by giving the world the best gifts you have to offer. And that's your mission in life. And so tell me about you had the accident, you began moving into your purpose and your passion. And so, you spoke for the UN, you spoke at the World Bank, you wrote a book. But between the accomplishments, things have to happen. The journey isn't always that easy. People see people who are successful, and they see the resume, and they see this check mark, entrepreneur, they see the UN, the World Bank. What happens between those times? You know, maybe talk about your challenges, your fears. I want to help people who are listening who aren't where you are to understand what happens between the big, you know, the big, you know, accomplishments.
It's funny you bring that. When I got that honor of the entrepreneur, my biggest concern at the time was how I was going to make up $20,000 in debt, right? That was like, oh my gosh, because I was getting my MBA. I didn't know if I was going to come back for my 2016 year, which was my final year, and I wanted to because I wanted to graduate, right? And I was like, man, to the world, it looks like I'm doing really, really well, but I'm thinking of my rent, thinking of my schooling, I'm thinking of my visa, I'm thinking of, like, finding a way to turn this into, like, a business. And it wasn't easy. I mean, I had to get really, really creative. I knew that I had put myself in this position, and I knew this was a possibility when you move to New York City without sort of having that plan. And the way I sort of structured my career was, like, I wasn't going to take a job that I didn't feel fulfilled in anymore. So me putting myself in that position meant that even though recruiters came to my campus, my MBA, and said, hey, we can offer you this amount of money because you have this qualification, I needed to have the fortitude to say no. So I was saying no to all these recruiters and realizing that, Tayo, you've got to find a way to pay for it. What are you doing? So
exactly.
So I did a few things. I for me to get to $20,000 in debt, I met with the dean. I just basically said, you know, this is kind of what I've done for the school in terms of, I was part of the student body, in terms of changing some events and then doing that. And I feel like I told her I wanted to graduate. So I was able to, I got like $5,000like out of that. It was like, okay, I got them to give me a scholarship, $5,000. So that's $15,000. So then I was like, oh, I got $15,000 left to do. So I went to the other people on campus. I was like, okay, I got to do a work study. Is there any professor, anyone that needs me to study or do anything? I'll work for the pay or all that kind of stuff. They're like, okay, fine. We'll get that with $10,000. So I was working my podcast. I was working for the school, and I was working to finish and graduate at the same time. But that came at a cost because I was basically working for the school. So that was $10,000, and then I mustered up $5,000 somehow from scrapping and hustling. And then I did that the day before enrollment was done. And that was how my new year in 2015 was. When everybody was saying Happy New Year, I was like, ah, I might not even be in this country for this new year because they might just send me back to Nigeria.
Isn't that interesting? You and I have very similar lives in that way, because when I began my nonprofit, I was still, initially I was on a work permit here in the U.S., and I began this huge thing because it was my passion. And I'm on a work permit, and I literally almost got, you know, was almost asked to go home a couple of times because, you know, when the war would stop in Liberia, they would say, well, we're not going to renew your papers. And so, you know, I think it's really beautiful and powerful and it's a testament of your passion that you didn't even have all your papers. You didn't know if you were going to be here or not. But you're like, I will not be a bystander to my life and my passions, and I'm going to move forward no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. No, thank you. I definitely lost some rights. But it didn't stop that, Mima, because then I had an internship.
There's more?
Yeah. Oh, no, it didn't stop right there. After I got a job while I was still in school, I thought, okay, finally, it's kind of cool. It's sort of what I, you know, it's not exactly what I want to do, but it's still cool to get some sort of income and do a job in the city. You know, pay them that. They fired me. I came with the new management, came in once as a CMO. I thought the CMO was trying to say, oh, hey, I'm new. I just want to talk to you about new directions. She was like, we're going to have to let you go. We don't feel like, you know, it was a good fit. And I just remember staring at her looking. I was like, the only thing I was saying in my head is, don't be like in the movies and throw the table up and walk off to tell me, you can leave now. Thank you for your time. And it was just so cold. And I remember going back to my computer and I just tried to log in. They already logged me out and everything. So I just walked out and just in shame like that. I remember, wow, that's what it feels like to be rejected again. And so in that weekend that I got fired on Friday, I spent the whole weekend building out what's my company now, UID, which is based on my mission statement, use your difference to make a difference. And I built out the whole content site. So I was like, I've got to channel this energy into something. Because I was so sad. Because it's like someone kicked me in the gut, and I felt like I wasn't good enough to get it. It reminded me of my A5 job rejection. So I just started, I went into this content-driven mode, and I started ramping up my hustle. So I did that, and then I started getting notoriety and publicity for my podcast, because it started to really, really grow and other publications were picking it up. And in the back of my head, I kept saying, it looks like I'm successful and I know I'm making an impact, because a lot of these, I get daily emails from people saying that they're doing, you know, a lot of stories to change their lives, but I don't know that I am actually successful. I feel like a fraud. And then World Bank came at me and said, we've been watching you for years now, for the last year rather. We want you to come speak to this. And then I was like, what? Like, I know you love me. This is interesting, but you have interesting timing, sir. So that's what I kept saying. I was like, every time there's something low happening, I'm like, why am I even doing all this stuff? It's always coming in. So, you know, I quit a job. I've been fired. I've been fired twice. I've been in debt $10,000. So, I'm saying all these stories, and I want the listeners to understand, and this is all part of the journey, but it's all led to this, you know, these amazing opportunities. And now, you know, I'm not in that position anymore, but if I'd given up any one of those times, you would not be here. I mean, I wouldn't be here. It is just the fact of the matter. I would have either given up and done something else, or I would have gone back, home. And And for me, what always reminded me and made me firm was I had that reminder of I had been in a job I hated, and I didn't want to be in that position. And that to me was, you know, I was like, if I have to go, then I have to go. But the mission of what I'm trying to do is to build the next set of global leaders and to build a more culturally aware generation. There are 3 billion people under 30. Those are the next leaders. How do we make sure that we don't make the same mistakes as current generation and previous generation? And that to me is so much, you know, bigger than anything that I could be worried about. And that's what has kept me going. And understanding your why and your purpose will always push you through any hard time, no matter how difficult it is. And that's, you know, you could hardly throw. I mean, I've had near death experience, been fired twice, I've quit, I've been in debt. You know, it's not like there was any, no one paid anything for me, right? So it's just, you can't say, What about this? I don't have, you know, the visa. I've had visa issues and I've worked through them. It's always about your ability to push through and understand your purpose that will guide you towards every purpose.
I love that. So I think it's important also to kind of talk about, because what you've done with your life is that you've created your own path. A lot of young people are looking at the standard path. They want to go to college. They want to kind of have a clear picture by the time they're in their junior on their life and what they're going to be doing. But it doesn't always work that way. And I find that people like yourself who tend to create their own path are the happiest. You didn't go a standard route. There was no job description for being a global cultural leader that focuses on diversity and inclusion. You really just followed your heart. You followed your passion. You fell down. You got back up. I'm sure there are times when you cried and thought, maybe I'm on the wrong path, but you followed your passion, you followed your natural gifts and talents, and then you didn't stop. So what advice would you give to other young entrepreneurs and also to young men who are trying to, I find that men sometimes have a hard time because young men, women get, we talk, we connect, we share, we get together, we're very emotionally connected, but sometimes young men don't have those same types of networks. What advice do you have for young men who are looking to create their network and to create their passion and grow and, you know, in their own way, in their own unique individual way?
No, I mean, so it's a couple of things. And it's, first of all, I will always say, learn how to build that level of self-awareness. And that comes from being honest with yourself, but also surrounding yourself with the right type of people. You know, there's a saying that says, show me your friends and I'll tell you who you are. Your environment a lot of times dictates where your opportunity is. I think if you're surrounding yourself with a lot of negative people, you're going to start to see yourself that way. The other thing is, it's really, you know, have an inventory with you, yourself and your friend, where you identify what it is that you're good at, what's your skill set. It could be art, it could be music, it could be something, but know what it is that you're good at and then start seeing how you can leverage that. And then the last one is know your why. That Simon Sinek says it. He's a speaker that I listen to a lot, but if you notice, everybody knows, a lot of people rather, they know what they do and they know how they do it, but not everybody can tell you why they're doing what they're doing, you know, and if you can understand why you're doing what you're doing, it's going to be beneficial. And I said this is the last thing, but there's one more thing here. I think, and I got this from one of my guests that I was interviewing actually yesterday, and he said, a lot of us overestimate what we can do in a year, but we underestimate what we can do in 10 years. When he said that, I just remember pausing the way I imagine you're pausing now, and it is so true. Like if I was to look back at my 22-year-old self and thinking, like, I can't believe that this is my life for the next 60 years, and then that's around 2011, 2012, and now looking now at 2017, I'm like, myself then would never have thought that this was possible. And I back then I was thinking about, I wanted to do all these things to be considered successful, but I've done more than I initially thought. And it all needed to happen with me almost dying, with me almost losing the visa, with me getting fired twice. And with me having to come to Jesus moment to say, Ty, what is it that you want to do today? And how are you actually working towards that? So, yeah, patience, self-awareness, and making sure your environment is a very productive environment that benefits you. I think that those are the keys.
That's powerful. So as you've built your life and grown, I admire how you've stepped into your life and the path opens up as you step into it. But do you find that there's a benefit in having mentors? And have you had mentors that you've had as part of your tribe that have guided you through your career?
100%. 100%. I think mentors are key. You can't, I mean, a lot of this in life is you can't do it alone. I mean, we both share faith. I'm a Christian, but, you know, there's also, I think, we're all social human beings. And I think having the humility to understand that you don't know everything is key. I mean, there's so many people that can learn from you. And I can't tell you the amount of people that I've reached out to say, hey, can I get 5 minutes of your time? That, you know, I love what you've done with your career. I would love some insights on what I could do and maybe just learn from your day-to-day. And I do it all the time. And to be honest, my podcast is another form of mentorship for me. I mean, I feel like I learn a lot from each guest. You know, it's your interviewing, like a daily school for me. So it's not.
Yeah.
I never thought that I knew everything. I still don't know everything. I live in a world where I love to be the dumbest person in the room, for lack of a better word, because I know there's so and that's just how it is. It's not, but maybe it's just my personality to deflect, but that's for me, it's been the only way I've been able to understand anything, because a lot of what I do is understanding other people's cultures and perspectives, and that involves me not imposing my will on them, but rather understanding where they're coming from, and then explaining how other people see things. So, absolutely, 100% for me.
Powerful. Powerful. I love talking to you. So tell me, what are some of the mental tools that you use in your life to keep you focused? And I ask because, you know, you've given great advice, and people always ask me the same question, because you can't have the success you have without having tools that you use that propel you forward. Because in the moments of fear, in moments of self-doubt, in moments of insecurity, and even just as everyday regular rituals, there has to be a toolkit that you go to dip into to find that reserve of strength that pushes you forward. So what are some of the things that you use that are emotional and mental and spiritual tools that help you to do all the amazing work that you're doing?
Well, one of the things I like to do is start off my day with gratefulness, right? So I keep it's mental or physical. I have a gratitude diary. You know, what I'm thankful for happened today. You know, the 5 things, what I'm hoping to happen to, you know, just like that. So I look over what I was thankful for the previous day, and then I like to start my day off in a good mood. I always, you know, say a quick thank you or to God for anything that happens. But the other thing is I use tools like Evernote and Google Drive. So New York City is a very transient city. You know, you always walk in, you see people from different areas, and having Google Drive and Evernote on my phone, I just take mental notes like, okay, this happened, make mental notes, podcast episode possibly, introduce this person to that person, follow up in 2 weeks. So, you know, I do that. And I guess the last thing is my calendar. Everything works on my calendar just because there's so many activities to do in a day. And if I'm traveling or speaking, if it's not on my calendar, I tend to forget. So I guess it's recognizing and starting my day off with gratitude, ending my day off with gratitude, having productive uses of Evernote and Google Drive, because I write a lot, and using my calendar to keep myself accountable to things that I need to follow up with or understand and read. So, yeah.
So that's awesome. What are some of the spiritual tools that you use? You mentioned some practical tools, but what is a guy like Tayo used to keep him spiritually fortified?
I fail our praise myself, and you know, my mom is very spiritual, so she would always send me prayers. But I don't think that I have tools. I think it's for me, it's a conversation with God. You know, you have that daily, you have that weekly,
that is
whenever.
Powerful. That's a powerful tool. You're going to the source.
Yeah.
That is a powerful tool.
Oh, well, there you go. I guess I didn't even realize. But yeah.
That
but
is your tool. Go figure.
Yeah. Well, I guess then that's the answer to the question, Mayma. I go to the
Hey, that was my answer. You can't take my answer. Okay, so you can't pilfer on a live podcast. my next question is along the same lines. Do you feel you're living your soul purpose?
Yeah, I feel like my purpose is to ensure that people are able to use the difference to make a difference. That's my mission statement. So this is the most comfortable I've felt, you know. And you know, if you're able to turn down multiple job offers or resist the temptation to go to a more comfortable lifestyle and still follow your passion, I feel like you are living your life's purpose, because you realize then that what you're doing is way too important for you to give up. So, yeah, I do feel like that.
Awesome sauce. So I have some questions for you. We're going to be wrapping up in the next 5 minutes, so I want to get to the gist of the bliss conversation. So my first question is, what scares you?
Not achieving my full potential.
Yeah. Next, what brings you joy?
When I can put a smile on 5 people's faces every day.
Okay. How do you feel about obstacles in your life? What does an obstacle mean to you?
Well, an obstacle to me is something that gets in my way of perceived success. And how I feel about obstacles has changed over the last few years. Initially, my biggest fear was failure. And having people see me as a failure, I was like, oh, I got failed. But now, like I said, it's not achieving potential. So I see obstacles as a way for me to go back to the drawing board and rethink and refocus, realign my strategy. So, you know, no one really likes obstacles, but at the same time, I don't run away from them as I used to before.
Right, because obstacles give you a chance to kind of really break apart and change and shift. And we often are afraid of change, but I feel like change is one of our biggest gifts in life, change and challenges, because they really help us to transform, become better often than we were before.
Exactly.
So next question. What are you most clear about in your life?
I am most clear that in order for us to be better as a society, we have to understand what it's like to live and communicate across cultures. I feel like the more we put up walls and don't try to understand, the more dangerous our society becomes. And the other thing that I'm most clear about is that there is a God, and our day is coming soon. So there you go.
Beautiful. And what is last question? What does the word living bliss mean to you?
I think
the word bliss. That's two words.
Two words, living bliss.
What does that mean to you?
I think it just means following your North Star, right? Following your passion. What it is your mission is. Happiness is unique to everyone. And I think we're truly happy when we're doing what we're meant to do. So doing what you're meant to do and living in that space, for me, is what living bliss is.
Powerful. So I have one last question to ask before we sign off. So I'm on your website right now, and my other question is, are you like a part-time model? Because these pictures are all like on point. I mean, you're in these awesome suits. You're in the leather jacket with a tie, you know, like, so is that your next, you know, career move to walk the runway? What's up with that?
I don't think I'm talented at all to be a model at all. I mean, you're talking about me. You're talking about me. You have the picture. I don't have, you're the one on the magazine.
I don't have any kind of pictures.
Mama. All right. But that's not what the internet says. The internet says you're a superstar. And everybody wants you to grace cover, but
you're putting me on the spot now. But I think it's amazing that you're just so diverse. You're young, you're badass, you're a boss, you're doing your thing. You're fashionable and you're fun. I think it's amazing, and don't ever change. Just continue to be who you are, pursue your passion, your bliss, and I want to do whatever I can to help the world know more about you. So tell me where we can find you on, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Like, what are your social media sites?
Oh, yeah. So all my social media sites are all Ty Roxon. So it's TayRoxon. It's Ty Roxon. And TyRoxon.com is the hub. So you can always see everything I'm up to, everything I write, the podcast. The podcast is called As Told by Nomads, and that's on iTunes and everywhere. But if you search Ty Roxon, you can find me everywhere on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and my website.
That's amazing. Well, we look forward to staying connected with you. You're just a very powerful young man, and thanks for all you do, and look forward to having you on the podcast again soon.
Well, thank you, first of all, for having me on the show. It's been very, very humbling. You're amazing. You're a great leader, and it's an honor that you even thought of me as a guest, so thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, folks, there you have it, Ty Roxon. Until next time, Live bliss, love bliss, and be bliss.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. We hope you are inspired by the show. Remember, you're the catalyst that the world has been waiting for. In each moment, live in pure bliss.